This is Business Women Australia podcast, featuring industry leaders who bring their wealth of expertise from diverse areas to help you build a successful business. Now, onto the show. And welcome to another Business Women Australia podcast. And of course, Business Women Australia podcast is the number one rated podcast for Australian women by Feedspot recently. So we're so excited about that. And of course, I'm your host, Anne-Marie Cross. Now, joining me today is Marion Birchall. Now, she's the managing director of Azola Holdings Proprietary Limited, which is a management consulting business that are focused on the confluence of strategy, innovation, technology. So we're going to have an awesome conversation today. Now, she has had an extensive career in the public sector, which is spanning several government agencies and sectors, including water, agriculture, social policy, intergovernmental relations, data and digital reform. And her work's been published nationally as well as internationally on public sector innovation and public participation in the development of public policy. Now, she has degrees in science, sociology, policy and planning, along with a certificate in public leadership from Harvard Kennedy School of Government. And she brings a unique perspective on topics that are based on her experience across these sectors, disciplines, and practices. Now, on today's show, Marion's going to share tips on how to become a more innovative organization, also why customer experience is the new differentiator, as well as why innovation and strategy and customer experience have all converged and they need for a multi-layered approach to having real impact. So welcome, Marion.
Thanks, Anne-Marie, and congratulations on being the podcaster that that is part of the Business Women, and a great achievement.
Amazing. And you know what? It really is evident of the, such as yourself, the members that we have as part of Business Women Australia, because we get to feature awesome guests such as yourself that have incredible expertise to share and insights. And of course, you are today. And as I was reading through your introduction here, it's like, wow, you have lived such a full life. And, you know, through those experiences, have really been uniquely placed to speak into the topic that we're going to talk about today. I mean, how to converge all of those things. And I think right now where we're at in the environment where we're at with the challenges that many businesses and even government, local, state and national and around the world really needs to refocus and, you know, how do we move forward? What can we do better? All of those things. What was it about this that started you on your journey? Was it something that, I don't know, your family had been involved in, or has it been something that, experience directed you to the path that brought you today? Give us a snapshot of how you got into this.
Yeah, I suppose it's been bubbling for some time. I remember being in the public sector, a lot of people said to me, what are you doing here? Like, you, the way in which you think and operate is very non-traditional public sector. And I would always say to them, well, that's probably a good thing as to why I'm here. And so I kind of set up my own business as a bit of an experiment. So as you read out, I do have a science background, so I love me a good social experiment. And I thought, well, you know, why not give it a go? And if I don't do it now, then I never will, and I may regret that. And so one of the things that I try and do in my life is live a life of no regrets. And so I set up my own business. And in the process, it's actually really taught me a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And so even though, as you say, I've done a lot of things so far, I've still got a lot to learn. And that is one of the lessons I think that I've learned in setting up my business, is that perhaps sometimes we think that we're experts or we know a lot of things, we actually don't. And so one of my biggest lessons in this has really been to understand myself a lot more.
Yes.
And the skills that I have, because a lot of times when you're working, you're so focused on the doing that you don't take a step back and go, well, what is it that I'm doing and how am I doing that? And is that of value? And what's been interesting is that I can now have a better appreciation for that, and appreciation that not everyone has the same skills and experience, and so you bring something different and unique to the table, and that that's really important, because everyone in government, in industry, in business, not-for-profits, are all trying to get somewhere. They're trying to have a positive impact on the world and in people's lives. And in many instances, they're too busy, or perhaps they need an extra capability or different thinking to be able to help them get there. And so I almost say it like a jigsaw puzzle. So by looking at things in terms of what you can bring to the table for people to help them on that journey, I think is really important.
Yeah, so true. And, you know, sometimes when we are faced with a challenge or a complexity, we've heard that saying, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Well, isn't that the definition of stupidity or some term such as that? But one of the things that I know many businesses particularly has learned through the last kind of 18 months or so, and I'm sure we've heard the words such as pivot, agility, but it is important, I think, for all businesses to be very agile, because we're going to talk about innovation in a moment. To be innovative means, well, first I'd love for you to define that, but the ability to shift and be able to shift promptly without having to take so long to analyze certain things, because sometimes opportunities go and pass you by. But in your experience, and this can be from, you know, through the work that you've done in government and now, of course, in business, when we talk about agility and the ability to pivot and change and adapt, how are we doing? Are we getting better at that? Because if we're not able to do that, we can talk about innovation till we're blue in the face. Still, nothing will change. But how do you think we're faring now?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the short answer is it depends. So firstly, you ask the question of what is the definition of innovation? And there's many, many definitions of innovation. But the one that I particularly like is innovation is a change that adds value. And it has to be new, and it could be a disruptive new, it could be a radical new, or it could be just new to you. But it has to be, it can't just be an idea, it has to be an idea that's being implemented. So there's an action component to it. Mm-hmm. And that has to be something that is creating some kind of value. And so that's in essence what I think innovation is. And then in terms of your question about how are we faring, it really depends. So I think it's interesting because there has certainly been an acceleration in terms of the uptake of digital, given the whole pandemic side of things. And we've seen those organisations that were already set up for doing digital, who were already reading the strategic context in which that we're operating in and had the foundations in place, make that move and transition a lot easier than those agencies that had not. But what's important about digital is that it's really an enabling factor to the outcomes and the impact that you have as an organisation. So in and of itself, technology isn't necessarily innovative, but it's the way in which it is used that creates the innovation. And that's the footnote to that is obviously unless you're actually creating some kind of technology that is disruptive and new. Yeah. And so what's going to be interesting is once we come out of the pandemic is if some of these practices, ways of doing things and culture actually stick, or whether some organisations and people revert back to the way things were because that's what they're more comfortable with. And I think that's going to be a really interesting question. But in terms of what I'm seeing at the moment in terms of organisations, I think that there is definitely more appetite for innovation. There's definitely more appetite for change. I'm seeing some organisations get to a point of change exhaustion, though, so that's interesting. But also I'm seeing that there's a lot of focus on how do we do things better? How do we create greater efficiencies? How do we become more effective in what we're delivering to our end customer? And that customer can be, public sector or industry or business based, because everyone has customers. And so that's really what we're seeing in the market at the moment.
Yeah. I love how you have shared that when it comes to innovation or even the making of change, there has to be some form of benefit, an outcome, and the reason why. From an organization's point of view, particularly when you're looking at government, and let's face it, I think now we've come to a point where we realize that, you know, we need to have a viewpoint of collaboration. I think businesses have recognized that. And when we look at external, you know, key stakeholders and even internal key stakeholders, at one aspect of that, they're our customers, aren't they? They're people who we interrelate with or we deal with and sometimes provide a service and so forth, even employment and so forth. And so hopefully, you know, the things that we've been through has certainly opened the door for more change. Something, and I can't quite recall who I heard this of, but they were saying, and this was from the US, that the rate of change that has had to happen over the last 80 months to 2 years has probably equated to what normally would have taken even up to 6 years. That's how quickly people have had to move. Now, obviously, we don't want to maintain that rapid pace. As you can say, that can often lead to exhaustion. What would be something that as organisations, whether we're in business for ourselves or even in government, or maybe there's a difference, there needs to be a balance, doesn't there? But there always needs to be some foresight moving forward. And how can we take that balance between doing business as with the normal course of the day, but also always being aware, are there different technologies that we can use that can improve internal, our customers, our, you know, team, and externally? Is there like a formula that businesses, if you keep this in place, there's always going to be moving forward and adopting of new policies and technologies? Is there almost like a formula?
I don't know if there's necessarily a formula. There's definitely different methodologies and approaches that people use. Yeah. And so I guess in a practical sense, it looks a little bit something like this. Firstly, some organisations prefer to be what's called ambidextrous. So they have status quo and business as usual, and they continue on doing that because that is generally their bread and butter and what they're delivering, at least in the short term. Yeah. And then they have the other part of the business, which is almost like the innovation side of the business. So what are we looking at in terms of disruption in our marketplace? How can we position? What are the things that we need to be trialing? How can we pilot or test or potentially even be the disruptors ourselves in our own marketplace or in other marketplaces, in other verticals that might be able to use our products, services, ways in which we do things. And so there is that ambidextrous organisation. And there's a lot, if people are interested, there are articles in Harvard Business Review around ambidextrous organisations and how they operate. Other ways in which I've seen organisations work is they set specific periods of time for teams to come together, and it's usually across so horizontally across the organisation. It's not necessarily people that are your executives or CEOs or management. You're looking more at frontline staff because they're the ones that are at the interface and generally know what's going on. And you basically create time and space for them to come together on a regular basis to look at what those opportunities could be, and you give them like an allocation of time to actually be able to come up with those ideas, and then you potentially set up a governance model around where those ideas go and how they then get looked at. And if they need funding, you know, set aside a percentage of funding. So some organisations have a more structured approach like that around innovation within their own organisations. And, you know, you could have an ideas management system as opposed to having that multidisciplinary team of people that if you are doing that, though, you have to be in terms of the team, you have to be very specific about the type of capabilities and personalities that you're looking for. So they do have to be handpicked. If you're doing an ideas management system, that in and of itself does require management, and you can't just set it up and then let it run. You do actually have to have particular processes and structures in place, such as feedback and you know, how things are going to be looked at and criteria and governance. And the biggest thing about all of this is really about being able to demonstrate that these things have traction. And so what is being done as a result of the innovation team or approach that you're using, and being able to demonstrate that it is having impact, it is creating outcomes, because that's when you actually start to get more buy-in from the organisation, and also you start to accelerate the innovation as well, and it starts to impact on culture.
Yeah.
And there's different ways of doing that.
And having those business case studies, which you might present, but then also, as you say, monitor them, see that you've got a mechanism in place to be able to quantify the results and the impact. That's always good, even for the team, to be able to see, you know, this is what happening before and this is what was happening after. And as you say, that sparks continual embracing of, hey, you know, not just a here he comes again with another idea, you know. It can be exhausting, I know, especially. And I want to ask you this, and but I'll preempt it by sharing, you know, often, and I'm sure you've worked with what we would call more the entrepreneurial style, and you've got the entrepreneur who's often very innovative. And I can't remember the book. If I think of it, I think it's called Traction. It said all entrepreneurs should really have an intrapreneur, an integrator working for them, because the entrepreneurial mindset will often come up with lots of great ideas, but not necessarily follow through. And it is important to that integrator, that person or persons that will follow that through. When you're talking about innovation or and an innovation, particularly if you look at a culture of very much, I mean, government is about driving policy, it's about the stability and things such as that, the very much these are the rules, regulations typically are the ones that just need to see that things are being done. Would you say then that organisations need to hire more people that have more of that bent, if you will, personal approach, characteristics of being more innovative? Does that make sense? Do you, when you talked earlier about having to hire? So I'm just sharing that because, you know, sometimes you can get a group of people around and go, right, we've got half an hour, let's come up with lots of ideas. I mean, they naturally need to be able to do that, but create a space in which, you know, sometimes these ideas take a little bit of time to bubble up and so forth. I'd love you to share any insights here.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's a couple of points that I would make. The first one is around the recruitment question that you raised. Sometimes organisations already have intrapreneurs, but the two points that I'd make around that is that maybe they're not allowed to be unleashed, and maybe due to the culture of the organisation, they haven't had the opportunity to demonstrate their intrapreneurship. The second part to that is perhaps they already are being intrapreneurial, but the greater culture of the organisation is such that the status quo is so entrenched that they're not getting traction within the organisation. So it's about creating the environment which enables that intrapreneurship to happen. which leads me to my third point, which is even if you do recruit as an organisation specifically for an intrapreneur, if you don't have the right environment for them to operate as an organisation, then you're still going to end up in the same position. So it's more than, in my view, it's more than just recruiting. It's about creating the enabling environment for them to flourish. I think that there was another point I was going to make, but I can't remember what it was.
I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you brought that up, because I think there are a lot of entrepreneurs, people who have great ideas. Now, it does not mean that you have to implement every single one, but there's nothing worse than when there is an idea and it was shared because there was an issue, a problem, feedback from customers. And I'm building up to the point that, hey, we need to be doing this, because as you say, customer experience is the new differentiator. If we don't create an environment in which ideas can and these individuals can flourish, they will leave. They will either burn out or leave, because it's just part of who they are. And those new ideas, if they're not the good ones and not even taken on board or discussed, they'll leave. So let's then move on to you're saying, and we see this happening even as consumers are saying, and you're saying customer experience is the new differentiator. What do you mean by that, and how can we start to be more, I don't know, start to use some of the tools and things that maybe you've come across to help us increase customer experience, if you will?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're spot on around people leaving if they're not enabled. And before I answer your question about customer experience, what we're finding in the work that we're doing, and certainly in my experience with being an executive and management in those positions in my career, is that if people are given the time and space, they will come up with really great ideas. So it's really about creating the environment and a really solid innovation process that allows those things to happen, because in many instances they know the solution, but it's really about getting the approval and the traction and having those other capabilities around people being able to then operationalize it. And the other point that I would make that's really important about innovation is that it can't be seen as a separate arm of the organization. Like, it really is about doing things differently. So once it is piloted and trialed, it does need to be part of BAU in the organisation. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would make. And then I'll answer your question about customer experience. It absolutely is the differentiator in the marketplace at the moment. And it probably seems a little bit weird that we've gone from innovation to customer experience, but it's not. Because the reality is when we talk about customer experience, we're not talking about customer service. So customer service is very transactional. It's a point in time transaction that you have with someone. Customer experience is about the whole experience that you have as a customer with an organisation, be that government, be it industry, be it a business, be it a not-for-profit. And it's really multi-layered. So, I'm not talking about the customer support officer or the customer service officer. Everyone in an organisation is responsible for customer experience, because it's about how you do your business as an organisation and how that business is then experienced internally as well as externally. And so it's really about a focus on how your customer is experiencing what you do as an organisation. And so that touches all areas of the business, and right down to IT, because it's how it's enabled, and the, I guess, meeting the expectations that we have around, being able to access services and information anywhere, anytime, on any device. It's also around making sure that the processes are efficient, so that as a customer you get what you need when you need it. So it's timely, it doesn't cost you a lot, And for particularly for small businesses, this is really important because time is money. It's also around, you know, the attitude of people as well. And so there's a whole layering of business process, of marketing, of how you use your technology, customer interaction. There's a whole layering that happens when we talk about customer experience. And it really does come down to the business itself and culture, the capabilities that you have to enable that to happen, and the processes that you have. And so innovation in itself is helping businesses, organisations to actually do this better, particularly around this time during the pandemic. As we talked about, people are busier than ever. I think we're all over the whole Zoom meetings, which is basically taking up our entire 8-hour day, and then we have to work another 8 hours just to actually deliver the work that we're supposed to do. And so creating these efficiencies and innovations is really key to ensuring we don't get burnout and exhaustion. And the other thing is that most people who work want to make sure that they're actually delivering value and that it's impactful. And so this is all kind of confluencing together at this point in time. And so what we're doing with a lot of our clients is using innovation practices, methodologies and thinking, such as organization, innovation frameworks, design thinking, agile, lean methodologies that you see in startups, to really get them to reimagine what their business could be like and the processes that they have, and their interactions with their customers, to create a better experience for everyone, not only their end customer, but also their staff as well. And we're actually seeing that that's getting a lot of traction at the moment, in terms of the type of outcomes that are being achieved.
Yes. Would you say, as you're starting to look at, you know, whatever area within the business to try and streamline things, often it's going back, you talked about lean, going back to the most simple of systems, because over time things, you know, in this step and then that step and then this step can become very outdated, and in some instances we can get rid of a lot of steps. Would you say for a business then that is maybe just starting out on this, or maybe they're having difficulties, it's because A, they are taking things on, you know, sometimes we try projects, we don't just go for small and then build on that, but we try and that saying, you know, bite off more than you can chew. What kind of things have you seen then, this is my question, that would thwart, that would block, that would be a barrier to try and embrace some of the things that you've spoken about, just so that we can be aware of that? Because again, there can be a lot of talk, and we don't want to get off on the wrong foot, because if we've got a team of people, how we manage this entire process is going to impact how they embrace it moving forward. And if they have a negative experience or experiences, it's going to take a lot more work, isn't it, Marianne, for us to get them on board for a project that may really start to impact across the customer's experience. Can you share some insights in that? What would be some barriers and blocks that we want to be aware of?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of them is the status quo. So a lot of times, and I'm sure Anne-Marie and some and the rest of the viewers are quite will understand this, is that when you come up with an idea, people go, I've tried it before, it didn't work, this is the way we've always done it, why do we need to change, because it works. And those sorts of excuses. The status quo in and of itself is actually quite powerful, because many of the processes and structures that we have built reinforce it. And so it can actually be one of the biggest barriers, and create the greatest resistance, because people are very comfortable with it. And it's one of the things that I found quite interesting in my time in management, is the level of comfort people have with the status quo. And even though it can be complex, people don't understand it, people wonder why do we do it this way, the people don't really want to change it because they're comfortable with it and they know that it works. So that's one of the biggest barriers. Another barrier is management. So we know in the literature, but also through our own experience, that a lot of the middle management and upper management are very comfortable with the status quo because it's what they know. And there's almost this culture that they have to know everything, that they have to know the answer. And if they don't know, then they're weak or they're not a leader or that they should know this stuff. And the reality is that we live in an ever complex world. We don't actually need to know everything, and that's what you've got your team there for. And you can run different processes around things that are unknown, because more and more there are going to be unknown factors, and there are things that we're dealing with, particularly as we're in the industrial 4.0 or digital age, that we have no basis to base our understanding or decisions on. And so we have to get more comfortable with change and not knowing the answer. And that makes people very uncomfortable. So being able to get comfortable with the uncomfortable is going to become more and more important. And feeling comfortable in yourself to empower others to come up with some of the ideas is also going to become more and more important as well as we move forward as a society. And in the business world as well.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you reinforced the fact that as leaders, we don't have to know everything, and the importance of surrounding ourselves with the right team member who has that knowledge, because as a leader, you want to influence the environment in which they can work together. Individually together for the betterment and for their rolling out or whatever it is that they're doing of the project, and of obviously the end customer and internal customers. The conversations that I have had, particularly with women, you know, women leaders, women in business, who themselves think I need to know everything, and if I don't know something, I'm going to look bad. Men have even said to me too, privately, that they have that too, but they're just able to just move forward anyway. I mean, that's so important to get. I mean, if we knew all of the answers, I mean, how boring would that be? I mean, really. What are some things that you can give, because of just some advice, some insights, empowerment, that we don't have to know everything, but know what questions to ask, I think, isn't it? Know the questions to ask. What are some things that you can give us to help us become comfortable with that so that we can move forward? Because I think if we live with that fear, we can't step into who we are, you know, brilliantly and as that leader of the team. So what can we do?
Absolutely. So there's a couple of points that I would make. Firstly, I think it comes down to understanding that the way in which our society and education system is structured, it actually forces us to specialise in particular fields. And that is interesting in itself, and there are definitely reasons why that is the case in terms of justifying those particular disciplines and so on, and creating specialists and everything that goes with it. The reality is that we live in a multidisciplinary world, and so when we're dealing with a lot of these challenges that we're facing, it takes a multidisciplinary solution. And so it goes back to that earlier point of we each hold a piece of the jigsaw puzzle. And so as a leader, it's about creating that environment that allows multidisciplinary teams to come together. So the question really is around, how do you create a culture of multidisciplinary teams coming together, breaking down the silos of organisations, because that is where the magic happens, and creating the flexibility within the organisation that allows these teams to come together to actually solve some of these problems using the diversity and capabilities that are present within your organisation. Yeah. And that gets me to my next point, which is related, which is really around diversity. Like, we hear a lot about the importance of diversity. but we don't actually, in my belief, use it to its greatest extent at the moment because, again, it goes back to the way in which organisations are structured. So they're generally structured in terms of specific teams within silos, and we recruit for particular capabilities within those specific teams to deliver what's required within that specific team. Yet if we're talking about agile organisations and as a leader being able to solve some of these complex problems, what you need to be doing is essentially looking at creating diversity across the organisation and then leveraging that diversity for specific focused problems. And what that then also creates is a less siloed mentality. It creates a more flexible and agile organisation that is then more attuned to being able to change and deliver things. But it also creates greater innovation because those teams can then see the opportunity across the organisation as opposed to just within their particular verticals. And I guess the other thing that I would say is that for leaders, it definitely is about being able to ask the right questions, but it's about rethinking what it is to be a leader in an organisation. So in many instances, leaders just scale up what they've always done because that's how they've been successful and how they've got to those particular positions. But in my experience, and I had to do this myself when I ended up moving into an executive position, was I had to rethink what it was to be an executive in an organisation as opposed to a senior manager. And it's very different. And it is more around, you know, things like, you know, creating the culture in the organisation, creating the empowerment of your team, because if you empower your team, they're more likely to be loyal to you, they feel more valued, they feel listened to, they have greater impact. You as an organisation and as a leader end up looking really good and so that's really awesome. But also it's about asking the right questions. It's about moving things out of the way for people so that they can be their best that they can be. And it's about strategy. So it's about looking at that broader environment and strategizing and positioning the organization in the best way possible so that you have a sustained future. So you're working, and people say you should be working more on the business as opposed to in the business, and that is actually true.
Yeah. I mean, all of those are such brilliant insights, and we could probably spend an entire day diving deeper into all of those particular areas. However, as you've said, with such of the complexities, the challenges and the rapid rate of change, I mean, there's a saying, isn't it, which kind of we know that, you know, things are moving quicker and quicker. And as you say, the more things are moving, the more we realise that we don't know, you know. And one last question that I would love to ask, and just as kind of diving in, maybe reflecting a little bit of your background. However, there's a purpose for this, and often I think we neglect to focus on this. I mean, you've got a diverse experience, and I think some of the best insights, learnings that we have are from the hindsight, you know, that we've learned from previous things, whether it be challenges or projects that worked really well. Would you say then when we're looking at innovation or we're looking at what ways can we do things that will improve customer experience or whatever it is, that we often are neglecting, well, what's happened before? What's been done that worked really well? Can we change it to perhaps suit what's going on here? I mean, do you reflect a lot and bring what you've been doing in the previous experiences? And do you think that we tend to negate a lot of that experience because it maybe does not seem relevant to now, or we're always looking for those bright, shiny objects? I'd love you to share a little bit about that because this is really your life story, isn't it? You bring such a beautiful mix of expertise that you draw on.
Oh, thanks, Anne-Marie. I guess there's some positive to always wanting to learn new things.
Oh, that's right. It could be, I know. I mean, what's the point of just doing one thing where there's such a diversity of wonderful things to learn out there? But, yeah, share.
Life is a smorgasbord. Yeah. So I agree. I can't really speak for everyone else, but from my point of view, I try and bring the practical experience and lived experience that I have to anything that I do. And even if it hasn't worked somewhere, it might work somewhere else, or understanding what the lessons were learned in any of those failures, because they might not apply somewhere else. But it's really delving into, how do I put this? I'll take a step back. So in most instances, what I see is that people rely on a process or framework to actually do something. And it's almost like a comfort blanket, because it's like, if I follow this process or if I follow this framework, then I should end up with this positive result that I'm looking for. The reality is, it's not that simple, because there's this complicating factor called people.
Yeah.
And so that's right. You always forget the human factor. So it doesn't matter what process or framework you use, the human is what gets in the way. And the thing is that we never deal with one human, we're dealing with multiple humans. And so it's that humanistic factor that usually gets missed. And in my experience, that's usually what ends up being the thing that is either the success or a failure of a particular initiative. And the successes are usually because they've considered the human factor and they've considered the unique environmental factors that the initiative is going to be operating in. And in order to do that, you need to have people that are skilled in multiple ways to be able to deliver that successfully. So, and that includes having that practical experience and the nous to be able to understand what it is you're faced and how best to manoeuvre that, and be agile enough to pivot, or if you're into dance, or change, you know, when things are going a certain way. And that does take experience to do. So absolutely right, Anne-Marie. Oh, you're on mute. The digital age, you're on mute.
I just had someone coming in the back door, so I thought I'm just going to mute myself. But I just said it's those people, they always get in the way of our wonderful new innovations, don't they? If we could just work that out. Look, it's been such a delight speaking with you today, and as I know that
before you wrap up, they are the things that get in the way, but they're also the most powerful thing as well. So if you're smart enough to enable them, to get them on board, and to really focus them on how they can have impact, you are going to be set up for major success.
And that's true leadership, isn't it? You know, how often, and I'm sure that you would often have this, you get someone who gets you to come into the organization, said, I need you to fix my people. It's like those dog behavioralists. I need you to fix my dog. Let's talk about you, the owner. You know, often the issue is not the people, it's you as the leader. And you know what? I think that's a sign of quality leadership. It's the leader who steps forward and says, yeah, and you need to take ownership for that, don't you? Because you are the leader. You are the leader, and the buck stops with you.
Yeah, and leadership isn't management. So there's a clear delineation. And because you might be a manager or an executive, that doesn't necessarily make you immediately a leader. In some instances, you know, people do have leadership capabilities, and that's great because they've been recruited appropriately. But leadership can come from anyone in any organisation. It's really about embracing that opportunity seeing how far you can push, because a lot of times that boundary is a lot further away than what you think it is.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, if I think back to some of the leaders that I worked with many years ago, I must say many, many decades ago, the ones that are still the standout, you might not have necessarily agreed with a decision or something that they implemented, but you had such respect for them, respect, because you know that that was, it was mutual, it was reciprocated, and you knew that if the decision was no or not yet, it wasn't no the entire time, and you had that trust. I think being a trustworthy, integral leader, you know that, and sadly, I think we, you know, there's some organisations, yeah, that it's not the issue with the people, but rather the leadership. It's such a great reminder. So, and as I was saying before, Mary, we have just scratched the surface. We could probably talk all day and many days and dive absolutely a lot deeper into this. But for people who have really resonated with what you shared today and thought, you know, we'd love to speak and find out more about what you do, how you can support people, what's the best way for them to connect?
Yeah, so they can certainly send me an email. Am I allowed to give my email address on the podcast?
Maybe which is the best way in case you get inundated, I suppose, but what's the best way? Email's fine.
Yeah, email's probably the best way. My husband always tells me don't call her because she never picks up her phone. So email's definitely best. It's mbirchall@iinet.net.au.
Terrific. Fantastic. And, of course, I'm sure you're across the different socials and yes, we'll tag you in this particular podcast episode too. I know that we are streaming also on LinkedIn as well. So reach out and connect that way and email here too. That's right. I mean, who rings these days? emails before, aren't they? Emails and messaging online. Use some of that technology. So
what's that mean?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, look, it's been an absolute delight, and hopefully we will be able to connect one day. I know often as Business Women Australia, we're a collective of business women around Australia, and here in Melbourne, of course, we've had our this is when we're going to meet, and then we've got to cancel it, and this is when we're going to meet. So hopefully one day we will be able to have a collective meeting where we're all sitting face to face and enjoying having a chat that one too. But thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Anne-Marie. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You've been listening to Business Women Australia podcast. Want to become part of a dynamic collective of women who are passionate about business success and personal growth? Go to businesswomenaustralia.com.au/membership to apply. That's businesswomenaustralia.com.au/membership.